Good morning. How's everybody doing? Did y'all feel his presence this morning so far? Yeah? Isn't that good? Well, you're getting ready to get another treat here, too. So, got two quick announcements before we do that. And if the guest service folks can go ahead and come on down, we're going to receive our offering. And so, if you need some time to do so, take that now. Two quick offerings. Just like Jen said on the announcements, we are doing a blood drive today. And it's going on directly behind us in the gym. So if you are interested or didn't sign up, it's completely okay. I encourage you just to go back there and just pop in. They'll probably have a slot ready for you. And the great thing about this particular blood drive is all the blood has already been accounted for. And it's actually going to a local place and being used within the next 2 or 3 days. So it's not going to a bank. It is actually being used locally and being already accounted for. So if you have time today and you'd like to do so, we'd love to have you back there. It's going to a great cause. Second announcement is we are doing our first look in next week. And if you have seen it, you've seen it announced, but may not know exactly what it's about. If you've ever been in your chair or walking around here and seen all the different things that go on around this place, and ever wondered, what can I do? How can I get involved? What is my place? I feel like I could do this, but I'm not exactly sure everything that goes on around this place. We're going to take 45 quick minutes. It is going to be an action-packed meeting directly after the service on Sunday next week. So if you're interested and ever wanted to know anything about it, there's no commitment. It's just finding out about everything that goes on around this joint. We'll actually take a tour around this place and show you a behind-the-scenes look of what actually goes on around here. And so next week, if you put on your calendar, first look, if you want more information, myself and a couple other staff and volunteers will be in the hub. Love to have you out there, answer any questions. But you don't need to sign up for this. If you want, you can just show up right then and there. So directly following service next week, if you'll just go back to the chapel, we'll love to chat with you there. All right, let's pray over our offering, and then we got a treat in store for you, all right? Father, thank you so much for this wonderful weekend where we just get to grow closer to you. And Father, right now, as a church and as a congregation, we honor you with our giving. And so, Father, right now, as they give, we just ask that it just bless this church and bless their lives richly, Father. So bless them as they give. In Jesus' name, amen.
Well, good morning. My name is Eddie Tilley. I'm one of the pastors on staff here at Cathedral. And our senior pastor, Mike Lewis, who's sitting on the front row, is back from his trip to Albania. He had an amazing time working with the same ministry he told us about before that works with children. And he's got some wonderful things to report to you about that later. But when he got back this week, it was kind of later in the week, and it was a very, like, just running trip that he had. And so when he got back, I texted him. I said, just an option. I said, I feel like I might have one more message in me about Moses. If you want to just enjoy your family, you know, recover from the jet lag and just take it easy. So we sat down in his office. He said, tell me what you're thinking. So I ran by him what, you know, my thought was for the next step. And he said, let's go for it. So I'm here and I'm going to go for it with him on the front row. Yeah. And so we are talking about Moses, and we're picking up from where we left off last week. And if you weren't here last week, I really encourage you to go back and watch that message, because last week was the first 40 years of Moses' life, and there really are just some incredible miracles that take place. And it's a wonderful example of how God intervenes in our life when evil is sent our way to bring death and destruction, and God just sort of flips that thing upside down and brings good out of it. So it's a great, great message on the first 40 years of Moses' life. Now, before we start into the second 40 years today, I've got sort of some fill-in-the-blanks to see if you can answer the blanks to these questions and kind of get us ready for the content. First one is this. One is the... Yes, loneliest number. Perfect. That ship has... Yep. My time has come and... Yep. Broke, busted, and... Perfect. So, if you've ever said any of that about your own life, you're in a great place today, because this message is just for you. And let me just go ahead and apologize, you know, because the first 40 years of Moses' life were incredible, awesome. Things were happening and going, and the next 40 years, it's 40 years of nothing. Just 40 years of nothing. So we're going to try to get a sermon out of 40 years of nothing. Now, we're going to start by looking at the same scripture of text we looked at last week. And one of the cool things we found out last week is that this particular story about Moses, in the Bible, we have a second camera angle, if you will, to what happened with Moses, because the original recording of his story is found in the book of Exodus. Now, that is a great accounting of what happened, but he wrote it. Moses wrote the book of Exodus. So this is after everything had happened. He went back and he wrote it down. And I have determined that Moses and Pastor Mike have a lot in common. And this is what they have in common. We can't write a book about Pastor Mike until he's dead and gone. I'm dead serious, because anything that we write that we believe is true, which is how amazing he is and how incredible he is and what he does and what we see in him, he was saying, no, don't put that in there. Don't put that in there. Moses was the same way. Moses didn't put any of the incredible stuff in there about himself that really sets up his story even better. So God fixed that. And in the New Testament, a couple thousand years after Moses wrote Exodus and he's gone, there's a man by the name of Stephen who's been drug into court in front of the religious leaders, and he's getting ready to be executed, and he is building the case for Jesus Christ being the Messiah. And the Spirit of God comes on him, and he goes all the way back to the very beginning, and he builds that case for Jesus. And right in the middle of it is the same accounting of Moses' life, except the Holy Spirit said, you know what, people need to know just who you were before all this stuff happened. So we're going to start off with that second camera angle, which is found in the book of Acts, chapter 7. It says, at the time Moses was born, a beautiful child in God's eyes, his parents cared for him at home for 3 months. And when they had to abandon him, Pharaoh's daughter adopted him and raised him as her own son. Moses was taught all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and he was powerful in both speech and action. See, that's the thing Moses would never say about himself, that he had risen to this place in the Egyptian kingdom. Last week we said this is the Hollywood Moses. This is Charlton Heston in the Ten Commandments. This is the Disney Prince of Egypt. This is the strapping young man in the prime of his life. And we talked about that phrase, the wisdom of the Egyptians, because at this point in time, the Egyptian nation is the pinnacle of knowledge and science and architecture and construction and medicine in the world. They are leading the world in all these areas. And so God works out these miracles where Moses, who was doomed to die because he was a male Hebrew child, and Pharaoh had given an order that all male infant Hebrews be thrown into the crocodile-infested river in an attempt to control the population of the Hebrew slaves, which was increasing. But God intervenes, and so now all of a sudden Moses finds himself in the very palace of Pharaoh. And he's being raised as an Egyptian because Pharaoh has no sons. So he's being raised to take over the throne in Egypt. And not only that, Pharaoh's daughter has inadvertently hired Moses' own mother to be his nanny. So Moses' whole life, his mother is telling him, I promise you she's telling him, look, God has called you to deliver us from slavery. How else do you account for the fact that you were doomed to die and now you're in line for the throne of Egypt? So obviously, God has called you to this cause. And so last week we talked about the fact that God's will in our lives has a what and it has a when. And Moses got the what right. The what was that he was called to deliver the Hebrew slaves. That absolutely was the call that was on his life. But what the tragedy of that story is that as he rose to this pinnacle in his life, in the prime of his life, when everything appeared that it was just right. I mean, obviously, now is the time. I'm at the peak of my power and training. God has placed me here. The Hebrew slaves are being oppressed, and this moment appears before him, and he says, surely this must be it. And we talked last week about the importance of the fact that God didn't call us to live our lives by reading the signs. He called us to live our life by listening to his voice. But in this instance, Moses said, I can put the pieces of the puzzle together. A blind man could see that this is my opportunity. And he took it into his own hands. And he violated God's will by saying, I'll make it happen. A good cause. The Hebrews were being oppressed. Let's read about what happened. Now we're going to jump to Exodus chapter 2. See, Moses fast-forwarded through all that good stuff about how great of a guy he had become. And he gets right to the bad stuff. And it's found in Exodus chapter 2. It says, many years later, when Moses had grown up, he went out to visit his own people, the Hebrews, and he saw how hard they were forced to work. During his visit, he saw an Egyptian beating one of his fellow Hebrews. After looking in all directions to make sure nobody was watching, Moses killed the Egyptian and hid the body in the sand. The next day, when Moses went out to visit his people again, he saw two Hebrew men fighting. "Why are you beating up your friend?" Moses said to the one who had started the fight. The man replied, "Who appointed you prince and judge? Are you going to kill me as you killed that Egyptian yesterday?" Then Moses was afraid, thinking, "Everyone knows what I did." And sure enough, Pharaoh heard what had happened, and he tried to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in the land of Midian. When Moses arrived in Midian, he sat down beside a well. So that's where we're picking up the story today. Today we're picking up the story with Moses sitting at this well in the middle of the desert. And if you think about it, this is his first moment that he's had for everything to slow down. He just came out of this incredible sort of this centrifugal force of everything lining up and the voices he's heard all along that he's called to deliver to Hebrew slaves and this opportunity presenting itself. And then he jumps into action to do the right thing. And it was the right thing. That guard had no reason to be beating that Hebrew. But it was the right thing at the wrong time. And the right thing at the wrong time is the wrong thing. But he did it. And now he's sitting beside this well and he's got time to think about it. And he's thinking, what the heck just happened? How in an instant did I go from the pinnacle of power and prestige and position to nothing? I'm nobody. And now I'm nowhere. The name Midian for that land means strife. There is no zip code there. UPS doesn't even deliver there. And he's sitting there beside this well and he starts thinking, what was I thinking? How could I make that mistake? You ever had 5 minutes in your life that you wish against all wishing that you could just go back and undo 5 minutes? Just five. It was just 5 minutes. It was just in the heat of that moment, if I could just go back right there. But he can't go back. And the truth is landing on him that I killed a man for no reason. It wasn't part of God's plan. God didn't tell me to do it. I did it on my own. And now that man is dead. And it's my fault. And all he can think of is how miserably, miserably, he's failed. He's failed. God called him to deliver to Hebrews, and he failed, and he failed royally, which sets up our one and only point for today, which is even in our failure, God is faithful. Now, Moses is sitting by this well, and we don't know how long he sat there and contemplated all of that. But it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that if you're in this desolate, barren desert and you're sitting by a well, it's only a matter of time before somebody else is going to show up. And sure enough, this shepherd started coming to water their flocks. And Moses sees them coming, so Moses kind of slinks off, kind of back into the bushes. Because when you're in that place, the last thing you want to do is talk to anybody. You don't want to see anybody. You don't want to talk to anybody. You don't want to answer any questions. You don't want anybody saying, "How did that happen?" You just want to be by yourself. And he kind of slinks off in the bushes. And the shepherds are coming. He hears the sheep. And then he looks. And it's kind of a strange sight because the first flock of sheep that are coming, the shepherds, are all women. Bad sign. Bad sign. There's seven of them to be exact, and they happen to be the daughters of Jethro. Jethro was kind of a prince in that region of Midian, and he didn't have any sons. And so his seven daughters are bringing the sheep, and so Moses is like, you know, I don't want anybody to see me, especially seven women. And he's trying just to stay away and avoid people at all cost. But then a little wrench is thrown into the equation, because now here come the men shepherds. And these aren't your mama shepherds. These are redneck shepherds. I mean, these are guys, just rough and tumble shepherds. I mean, just big, burly looking. They ain't shaved. They ain't bathed in months. And they just coming in there. And the girls were first, but them guys said, oh, no, y'all know the drill, back off. And they start having a little bit of a fight. Now, them girls put up a fight. So I'm going to tell you what, them girls, they've been doing this for a while. This ain't their first flock of sheep. All right, they've been here. They've done this before. So they put up a little bit of a battle, but, man, surrounded by a bunch of guys, they don't have a chance. And then that thing that Moses had, the same thing that got him in trouble in Egypt, it just rose up and it was, I've just got to do the right. I can't stand by and let this happen. They were here first and they're women. Who picks on women? And so he looks for something to use and he finds a stick. Now get this picture. Moses busts out of the bushes and comes at those shepherds. And he's wearing his fine silky gowns, his royal robe, skin smooth from the years of bathing in the finest of oils. And them old redneck shepherds say, well, look at you, silky drawers. Oh, you got your little sticky right there. What you gonna do with that little sticky there, little silky pants? Oh, you good looking. You just, oh, you don't like that we're picking on the little girls, do you? What you go? I wonder how long that guy ran his mouth before Moses, who was really mad at himself at what's happened. And now the opportunity has presented itself to take out all my anger and frustration. And before they know what's happened, he has opened a can of whoop camel on all of them. I mean, them old boys don't know what hit them. And they're just, I remember one time back in my heyday, when we used to cruise rivers, and there was this guy that he just loved to fight, especially when he got drunk. And one night he was drunk, and this little Asian guy walked into McDonald's, a little short fella, and so he thought, oh, yeah, watch this. So he goes up to him, he starts making fun of him, and then he gets in the guy's face. Before he could cock his fist back, that little Asian fella must have jack-slapped him about 15 times across his face. And then he was on the ground. And then the guy just got his food and walked out. And that old big boy would just lay it. That's how I picture this going down. Because you know Moses was trained in warfare, hand-to-hand combat. I mean, again, he was the best of best in Egypt. Okay, he knew how to fight. And he just wore them boys out. Which makes even the next part of the story that much funnier. Because the girls go home that evening, and their dad, Jethro's there, and they're like, Dad, you're not going to believe what happened. We went to the well, like we always do, to water the sheep, you know, and those old boys, them old thug guys, they showed up again, and, you know, they started bullying us and pushing us around. And then, out of nowhere, this big guy just bust out of the bushes with a stick. He was dressed all funny, kind of looked like royal or something. And he just beat every single one of those guys. I mean, he just beat them up, and then he stood there while we watered our sheep. And Jethro said, and why did you not bring him back with you? Am I the only person that realizes there are 7 women in this house? And no prospects for a husband anywhere? Let me get this straight. You find the one strapping, young, tall, dark, handsome man in the desert, and you leave him there? So they go back, and they get Moses, and then they bring him into Jethro's house. And Jethro says, you need a place to stay? Yeah, I need a place to stay. And that begins the next leg of Moses' journey. I actually have a story that kind of parallels Moses' story at this point. My wife and I, Susan, were high school sweethearts, and we dated all through high school. She was a freshman, I was a sophomore, we started dating, and we both graduated from high school, and I, you know, people that know me now say I'm nice, and I'm kind, and I'm tenderhearted. Y'all seen me cry 1,000 times on the stage. I was the exact opposite of that before I gave my heart to the Lord. So I was an expletive that I cannot say on the stage. That's just who I was. And Susan finally, because she was not, she was sweet, kind, just a beautiful girl. She finally got tired of it. She was done. And this particular day, she drove to my house and she said, that's it. I'm done with your mess. I'm done with all this junk. I'm tired of putting up with it. I'm better than this. I don't need this. I could go find somebody to treat me way better than you do. That's it. Don't call me. Don't come around me. I don't ever want to see you again. Get out of my life. And she drove off. Now, I am sitting by the well in Midian. And I'm thinking, what the heck just happened? It's funny how in that moment, you realize how good of a thing you have. And I realized I'm never, for the rest of my life, going to find a woman like that. I had the best thing I could ever have right in my hands, and now it's gone. And I didn't give up that easy for the next couple of months. She probably could have taken out a restraining order on me for stalking, because I tried everything. I sent flowers. I did everything. I'd drive by. I'd call. I'd try to use her parents, because her parents loved me. Even her parents were like, oh, my gosh, you got rid of Eddie. What? We like Eddie. So I tried to use them, you know, tell her how great I am. It didn't work. So about 2 months into it, I realized that's it. It's done. And I don't know how to describe what the next part of my life was like, other than to say, if you could have seen outwardly what was going on the inside, it's just kind of a thing where you're just staggering, and you can't. It's like people are talking, but you can't really hear them, and you're not making rational decisions. And I remember I met this girl, and you know, she liked me, she fell in love with me, and you know, and I'm just sort of going, yeah, sure, let's go out, listen. And I meet her family, and her family fell in love with me, like, oh gosh, this is awesome, you guys are made for each other, y'all need to get married. And I'm like, yeah, sure, that's marriage, that's great. I mean, there was no thought that should I do, because I was just in shock still from what I'd lost. And I'll never forget, it was about a year to the day after that happened, and my phone rings out of the blue, and it's Susan. She says, what are you doing? I said, nothing. What are you doing? She said, well, you know, I was just thinking, my birthday's in a couple of days, and thought maybe you might want to take me out for my birthday. So I played it all calm and cool. I said, yeah, yeah, it'd be great. And I hung up the phone. Now, this next part's going to sound mean, but sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. I went to that girl's house, and I dropped her like a hot potato. I mean, I did. And I even told her why. I said, Susan called. I'm going back to Susan. That's exactly what I did. And I went back, and we went out on that date, and we just celebrated 26 incredible years of marriage last week. But that's where Moses is now. He's in this strange place where he's just sort of staggering through. And Moses, you need a place to stay? Yeah, yeah, that'd be great. Did you notice Zipporah, my oldest daughter? You see, she's a great girl. Yeah, yeah, she's wonderful, yeah. You know, y'all should get married. Yeah, okay. All right, yeah, that'd be, and he gets married, and he spends the next 40 years of his life in this barren, desolate, just isolated place. I mean, think about the contrast here. When he was in Egypt, he'd wake up in the mornings, and a servant would come in and said, Moses, here's what your day looks like today. You know, we got breakfast. Right after breakfast, you got a few classes you need to take, and then we've got some hand-to-hand combat training for you, and then we'll have dinner after that. And then Pharaoh has some dignitaries coming in from another country. They're bearing gifts and everything. He'd like for you to sit on that and begin to kind of get the feel for what it means to be Pharaoh and sit on the throne. When all of that is done, then we can discuss and line up what you have planned for the next day. Now, there's no need for any kind of servant, because the itinerary is always the same. Wake up, feed the sheep, go to bed. Wake up, feed the sheep, go to bed. Day in, day out. Same old, same old, same old. No purpose, no thought of any. It's like you lose your imagination. It's like that barren wasteland of a desert, that armpit of the desert, the Jews considered it. Just this nowhere place. It's almost like even the physical appearance of it just matches what's on the inside. There's no life. I mean, your color choices are light brown, medium brown, or dark brown. That's it. Everything you see. I wonder what it was like for him just tending sheep. I wonder if in the beginning when he was doing it and he's trying to make sense of all of it, if he didn't talk to the sheep. If he didn't tell the sheep, y'all don't know. I was somebody. I mean, when I stood up, people stopped and they listened. And when I walked by, they watched to see where I was going. And when I had something to say, they knew that wisdom was about to come out of my mouth, only to have the sheep go. I wonder if a breeze ever blew and he was just leaning up against that staff. And you know, a breeze out in the desert like that is just like gold. Oh, gold. Yeah, I remember gold. Oh, the softness of that bed that I used to sleep in, and waking up in the morning and that servant would just bring that tray of fresh fruit. Just, oh, the fruit, the taste of that fruit. Oh, just melt in your mouth. I just wonder if he didn't just get knee-deep into that, remembering what it was like. And all of a sudden, meh, 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 feed me, feed me, feed me. I've been training hand-to-hand combat. Feed me. We've already eaten the 5 pieces of grass here. Come on, it's time to move on somewhere else. Let's go. Now, I'm totally making this part up. But what if he had old frat buddy show up? You know, somebody from Egypt U that went to school with him just happens to be riding his chariot through the Midian desert. And hey, there's only one well there. Everybody's got to stop, right? So he pulls his chariot up to stop and water his horse and everything. He gets out and he sees this guy standing over there. Moses? Oh, hey, Frank. You see, Moses. Well, how you doing, man? I'm doing good. Well, what you up to these days? What are you doing? Are you a shepherd? Yep, I'm a shepherd now. Ah. Well, I just, you know, thought being in line to be prince and all that, you know, I'm just trying to figure out, well, you know, hey, at least your ambition didn't go away, right? I mean, look at this. This is quite an impressive flock of sheep you got here. I mean, that's pretty, yeah, how long did it take you to get that done right there? They're not mine. I work for my father-in-law. Oh. Okay. Well, you know, would you mind telling me how you went? No, I really would just prefer not to talk about it, if you don't mind. I can imagine a conversation like that. No, we really don't have a whole lot of information on those 40 years. It's funny that from the ending of the verse where Moses sits down by the well to where he comes back and encounters a burning bush 40 years later, there are only 9 verses. And 3 of those don't even have to do with Moses. So there's 6 verses about Moses. And 3 of those have to deal with him getting married to Zipporah. So there's really 3 verses about Moses for 40 years. It's just crickets. It's nothing. It's dead silence. Just time for him to just play over and over and over in his mind the fact that he blew it and that he messed it up. And all God needed was somebody just to deliver his kids, and he blew it. That opportunity is gone. That ship has sailed. And we get a little bit of a glimpse of that when he has his first child. Now check out how well this marriage was going. Because Zipporah has the first child, and it's a son. And that was a big deal then. A, it's a big deal we've had a child. B, it's a really big deal that our first child is a male. And so she brings him to Moses. She's like, Moses, what shall we name him? Because, you know, back then, you know, when you would name the children, it was a name that had this incredible vision to it of how incredible life was, and just the dreams and the aspirations that you have would be encapsulated in the child's name, the blessing of the first child. And she said, Moses, what shall we name him? And staggering along, he just, foreigner, because that's what I am. I don't belong here. I'm not supposed to be here. Just call him foreigner. What a lovely marriage that was. I'm sure Zipporah thought, wow, I guess we just don't quite measure up to what you used to have. What was your doorway to the desert? What was it that brought you to that place to where you just thought, you know, gosh, that was an opportunity of a lifetime? Or what was the thing that you did that you say, if I could just get those 5 minutes of my life back, it would alter the rest of my life? Was it something that you did? Was it something somebody else did? Was it a phone call? Maybe the doctor calls and says, we have the biopsy test back and it doesn't look good. Or maybe it was just that last minute invitation to the boss's office on a Friday afternoon. He says, well, looks like we're going to trade you in for the latest and greatest. what was it that just all of a sudden rocked your world and threw you into this unimaginative, dreamless, just place of existence? Oh, you still work. You still, you know, you've got a job you're providing, but you're just going through the motions. You got family around you, you know, but it's just not the same. What is that thing, that what, that God has for your life that you've just been believing for so long? Maybe you're getting ready to go to work one morning, and when you left, your spouse was fixing their lunch for their work, and when you came back, all there was left was a note. And now you're by yourself. Or maybe it's being by yourself. Maybe you've just been single for so long, and you really thought God had that person set aside for you. You really did think that you heard Him say, oh yeah, I've got somebody for you. But it's just been too long. It's just too late. I wonder what Moses would say to every one of us that find ourselves in that place, in that moment. Well, we happen to know what he would say, because he would write about it later on in his life, after he encounters God at the burning bush, and he does some of the greatest things ever recorded in the Bible. He has a chance to look back and see that though he felt all alone, and though he felt like God had sort of cast him aside, in that moment, he had a revelation. And he wrote about it, and he was writing to the Hebrews, and it's in Deuteronomy 32, verse 10. This is what he said. He said, he found them in a desert land, in an empty, howling wasteland. He surrounded them and watched over them. He guarded them as he would guard his own eyes. You ever had something get close to your eyes? You know how fiercely you protect your eyes if anything even gets near them? And Moses realized, God was with me all along. He was right there with me all along. He knew I was going to mess up. He knew I was going to fail. And he brought me to this place, not so that he could get to know me, because he already knows me. He brought me there so that I could get to know myself, the real me that he wanted to use. See, what Moses would do is he would simply take this same verse of scripture and he would put you in there. And he would say to you, I found you in a desert land, in an empty, howling wasteland. God surrounded you and watched over you. He guarded you as he would guard his own. He's always there. Sometimes we don't feel like it. Sometimes it doesn't look like it. But he's always, always there. Would you bow your heads and close your eyes with me? I just want you to take just a moment and think about, what is it that God has put in your heart? What is that call? What is that thing that you go back, that you think of? And maybe as I was talking about Moses and how he blew his opportunity, what is that opportunity for you? A business venture? A relationship? Maybe it's your family, children that have gone so far away and you don't see any way they're going to come back. And maybe you had a hand in what had happened. Maybe you did. Maybe somebody else did. But what I wanted to ask you to do right now is think about that. Whose fault was it that you landed where you're at? Was it yours or was it somebody else's? If it was yours, just own it. Say, you know what? Yeah, I can see I did that. If it was somebody else, that's fine. But here's what you need to do. You need to let it go. Because it doesn't matter. You just need to let it go. You can't go back. You can't get the 5 minutes of your life back. It's done. It's over. But the awesome thing is God is way bigger than any mistake you or anybody else ever makes. And God knew exactly where you're going to be in this moment. And so your fight is not to make happen what you think was going to happen. Your fight is to believe that God is going to make it happen. Your fight is to believe that God is with you right here, right now. Your fight is to believe that God has not abandoned you. Your fight is to believe that that thing you've been believing God for is not gone. It's just not time yet. The time is right around the corner, and God is saying, I don't need you to make anything happen. I just need you to believe that I'm going to make it happen. I just need you to let go of the past. Let it go. Let it go, because it doesn't matter. Embrace now. Embrace me now. Keep believing that I'm going to do what I said I would do, because I love you And my word is true. It's greater than your emotions. It's greater than your thoughts. It's greater than your feelings. I will do in you exactly what I said I was going to do. So do you see it? Do you see it? Right there on the horizon. It's that dream, that dead dream you had. It's just all shriveled up and there's not even any leaves of life on it. But it just caught fire with the presence of God. And it's burning right in front of you. And all you have to do is believe. Lord, bless you and keep you and cause His face to shine upon you. And I bless you as you go with the fact that it's not too late. Eddie's been a long time. I know, but you know, Moses spent 40 years in the desert and he was the right young age of 84 when God used him to do some of the greatest miracles ever recorded in the history of the world at 84. So it's not too late. Wasn't too late for him, and it's not too late for you. Lord bless you guys. You're dismissed.